So let's get into what we're going to talk about today, how to prepare for your press trips. Last week, we spoke about what to expect on press trips and also beforehand in terms of things to look out for, to make sure you're not blindsided for, and how to kind of make sure that you make the most of your trip. But we didn't look how to make the most of your trip in terms of a financial sense, in terms of how to get the most pitches. We looked more in terms of just as a person being sane. But this week, we're going to look at how to prepare your work, yourself, your pitches, and so on for your upcoming trip. And we did a webinar in our last series on press trips, which is about specifically how to get on press trips. We did a webinar that was specifically on how to create a pitch portfolio to help get yourself on a trip, so in that pre-phase. And that was where you're going based on very limited information, and you're explaining to the person who is filling the slots on the trip what type of things you would pitch if accepted, which is different necessarily than going and actually putting together the pitches and doing more due diligence to figure out if what you're pitching is the right thing for the trip and will actually sell. And that's more what we're going to be talking about this week. So let's get started. And another thing that I think I might have mentioned when you weren't able to hear me is that we have been having trouble for the last couple weeks, you may have noticed, with GoToWebinar not playing very nicely with PowerPoint. So instead, this week, I'm using Adobe Acrobat, and so you'll see the little Adobe symbols at the top, but hopefully this will work much better. So that's what we're doing this week in terms of the viewing area. So as usual, if you don't see something moving forward, or again, like you couldn't hear me just now, definitely let me know, but I'm hoping that this will be more useful for us in terms of what we're trying to do with the webinar viewing. So let's go ahead and move on to the first slide. So you should be seeing the slides changing now. If not, please do let me know. This week, what we're going to be talking about specifically is we're going to start with, not necessarily recapping, but I want to talk about some questions that people submitted for other webinars that were more appropriate for this trip, and also just some questions that I hear a lot from people about how to go about pitching these stories from press trips. And then I'm going to walk through a process and also a way to kind of reorient your viewpoint on pitching stories from press trips to make sure that the ideas that you have before you go on the trip, as you're preparing for the trip, are ideas for stories that can actually sell, that actually do have homes. And then we're going to talk about how to match those things to specific sections of magazines to make sure you get the right research done when you're on the ground, and that's what we're going to talk about next week. So that's going to be a little intro, and then next week we'll go really more in depth about how to do that research on the ground on your trip. So I have sometimes noticed when I'm on press trips that there is an interesting lack of knowledge about where we are going on the trip, let alone what's even on the itinerary. Have any of you guys been on a press trip where you've kind of felt like people don't even know what country they're in or what language is spoken in that country, or just a general lack of understanding where they are that belies not having done any additional research before they went on the trip? I think that this might be a little more common. Somebody's got a really funny response to that. But yeah, it does happen. And I think, yeah, some of you are chiming in that you've seen it. And I think it might be a little more common, and I'm not throwing stones, but with influencer trips rather than writer trips, because you're not preparing a whole story based on the destination. You know, you're taking photos and you're sharing in country exactly what's happening as you experience it. And so it's less crucial to your promised product delivery to be doing that research. And in fact, even just now in the session that I was discussing with Tourism Australia, he was saying that he doesn't necessarily like to work with influencers for this reason, because they were somewhere else yesterday and they're going somewhere else tomorrow, and it's less of a highlight on his destination. So if you've been on press trips, you may have noticed this. If not, it's something that happens. And so not only will you set yourself apart from the other people on the trip in the eyes of the organizer and the venues that you're visiting and the tour guides by doing research, but it is absolutely crucial in terms of leaving your press trip being able to sell things. Now, I say this because even those of you who are going on blogs, I know a lot of people have come to me recently who have quite big blogs and big followings saying that, you know, they've been at this for a while and the ROI to put together a big post for their blog really isn't there. And while they do want to keep their blog up, they also want to be selling stories because now they feel good about writing stories and creating stories for other outlets. So even if you are on a trip to be posting on your social profiles or to be posting on your blog, it is very important to keep an eye as well on collecting research that can turn into stories for other outlets. So on the one hand, it's important to do research about the other outlets that you want to pitch to, but on the other hand, if you don't dig into the places on the itinerary, the destination itself, and find what people often refer to as angles, but I like to think of them more as story ideas, then when you're there, what happens is, you're on the one hand, you might spend time that you could have spent before learning things that are new, rather than asking the deeper questions to find out things that aren't readily available online, on the website of the venue, or other pieces of basic information. So in a way, your time on the ground on the trip is being wasted because you could be getting better information than what you're getting, but you're only getting basic information because that's the level that you need to understand what you're seeing. But the second part, and the more insidious and sucky part, I think, is that if you haven't done the prep beforehand and you're just getting kind of what's spoon-fed to you or something that's basic, you might leave the trip with nothing that you can sell, nothing that is new, nothing that would fit a publication, and nothing that will actually earn you money from this time that you invested in going on this trip. And for those of you that read the email newsletter or the blog post about today's webinar, I was really surprised to learn when I first started travel writing that a lot of experienced travel writers recommended not traveling very often because the time spent outside of the office didn't make sense. Because even if you're getting a feature in a glossy magazine for a dollar a word that's 2,000 words, and wouldn't we all love to have those, if you have to spend 2 weeks researching and writing up that trip, which, you know, I'm sure for a lot of you who would feel like it would take a while to write a feature, that might be conservative. But if you would spend 2 weeks of doing the research, doing the travel days there and back, writing up the trip, that's not going to make sense. $2,000 for 2 weeks of work is actually not a really great hourly rate, especially if you're really putting in quite a lot of hours. So one of the reasons that we need to make sure that we do research is because even if we have one story that we know that we can get, one story is very rarely slash never enough to pay for that time that we are spending physically on the ground doing the research. Because you may have heard me really harp everybody about hourly rates before, but this is really the only way to become a well, if not decently paid travel writer, is to make sure that what you're earning every hour is not $5 or $10, but it's more like $100. And if you are going to be spending even 2 or 3 days away from your desk, and say your rate isn't $100 an hour, say it's $50 an hour, but if you're spending 2 or 3 days away from your desk even at a minimum, and then you're spending 2 or 3 days of travel time to get to and from this destination, and then you're spending time writing up those stories, even if your hourly rate is $50 an hour, 2 or 3 days of travel, you know, that's $400 or $500 of lost income a day. That's $1,000, $1,500, and then add in travel days, you know, $2,000, $2,500 of income that you need to replace because you weren't working on those days that you were traveling on that trip. So we need to make sure that we're getting more than that one coveted glossy feature story to cover that time that we're away, and, you know, to come out on top in terms of the days that we're investing into the writing and the research of these trips. So we want to be double dipping. We want to be doing multiple stories off the same research. And what that means is that you need to be keenly aware of what to look for on the ground so that every time you are on a tour, you are visiting a museum, you are walking around, you are picking up the tidbits of information you need to put together more than one story. So let's jump into a couple questions that are related to what we're going to talk about today that I've either received directly from you guys in advance of the call or that I have heard a lot on coaching calls and in workshops. So I first want to do a couple quick recap questions about applying, because I know we did the series a of webinars on applying for press trips quite a few months back. And so some of you may not have been around for those, some of you may have missed them, so I just want to catch up on a couple things. So how do you handle applying for a trip when you don't have a confirmed assignment? This goes back to that pitch portfolio concept that I talked about. If you want to apply for a trip and you don't have a confirmed assignment, and they say, well, where are you going to put the stories from this thing? What you do is you go through the itinerary, you make sure you get an itinerary or the description of the trip that you've received from the PR person, as much as you can get, and you look at what stories you could be pitching. Then you look at what markets, what magazines, what websites you could be placing those stories into. And so in order to get on the trip, it's important to be conservative with those pitch ideas, right? Like, you don't want to say, well, you guys have a unique lodge, and I know that National Geographic Traveler has a section on unique lodges, so this is one of the stories that I'm telling you that I'm planning to pitch or place after the trip. You want to, you know, line up with magazines and websites that are relatively comfortable pitching targets for you, and that's going to be different for all of us, so that you're not overselling yourself and getting in trouble with the PR person later. But what we're going to talk about today is where you don't need to be conservative, where you're thinking about what you can pitch and researching it so that you have the material to put that pitch together after your trip. And here you should be pitching things that are comfortable, things that are a little out of your range, and things that are very much out of your range in order to make sure, like I said, that you get the most money, the most income, well, dear, out of the days that you are spending on this trip. Okay, let's see if we can get back to the slide we were on. Okay, great. So another pitch pre-acceptance related question that I got was, should you apply for or accept, oh sorry, I cut and pasted that from the question, it looks like a typo from the email, or accept a press trip even if you don't have a story lined up? And this particular question came from somebody who is a regular contributor to a very big name publication, which is distributed nationally, but it's like a major local newspaper. So in this case, she is used to having stories where she knows that she's going to place the story. And she was asking, as somebody who is a regular contributor, if it's ethical or if it really makes sense to accept a trip when you don't know where you're going to place it. And I know that this question and this situation is the reverse of the one that a lot of you guys find yourself in, which is that you don't have a regular outlet that you contribute to, and instead, you are working on placing stories around that trip. So I just wanted to put that context in as I answer this question. So in this case, as somebody who's a regular contributor, this is a situation I've been in a lot, is that for the last 2 or 3 years, I had quite a few magazines that I wrote for regularly. I had my beats, so to say, the areas that I covered really frequently. And I would often go there, not necessarily having a specific assignment for that area lined up, but knowing that I could probably place it, if not with one of my regular magazines, but somewhere else down the line. And again, this is a situation where I had regular things, and so I knew that even if I didn't have an assignment right now, I could probably work that trip into another story later. So if that's your situation, I think you should have a degree of confidence in yourself that if somebody somewhere is currently paying you regularly for work, that you do have the ability to place other trips that you're going on. So like I said, if you, we'll go back to the previous slide, if you don't have a confirmed assignment, but you're willing to bust your butt and get one, that's one situation, and you should definitely go ahead and apply for that trip, but make sure that you have made that contract, that covenant with yourself that you are going to pitch that trip, okay? But if you do regularly write for an outlet, and this isn't a fit for them right now, or you don't have an assignment for it right now, or it's just not a fit for them, period, have the confidence in yourself that you can find another home for it. Now, that ties directly into another question. I'm just going to skip ahead for a second. And this came from that same person. What if you go on a trip expecting to pitch after the trip and none of your pitches are accepted? And this is really important because I think a lot of us get down when we don't hear back, especially if we don't hear back. But even if we do hear back and you've heard me say over and over again that a no is good and that you should come back at them with another story idea, either way, if you're not getting acceptances because you're getting radio silence or you're not getting acceptances, but you're at least getting emails back from the editors, especially if they're encouraging no's, it's still a no, and that can still wear down on you over time. But I want to say, in response to this question and to that general sentiment, that you need to keep pitching, and you need to have that contract with yourself that this story will find a home. And if I've pitched enough and it's not finding a home, I will change the idea. I will change my tactic. I will change my audience. I will keep changing it until this destination, this story, finds a home. And in that vein, I had done a Monday mailbag with somebody a few weeks back who was looking at pitching more literary essays and wondering about outlets for that. And he told me he had a story he'd been pitching around, I want to say it was 2 years. I don't know. It was a while, and I don't have the number off the top of my head. But he just told me he found a home for it on a really great, really prestigious website. And I'm sure that you know you've heard 1,000 times things about Mark Twain getting 57 rejection letters and J.K. Rowling, who was kind of like on her last hope when she got her book published, all of these things. So just because you haven't gotten a yes yet doesn't mean you're not going to get one. But it does mean that you need to take a moment and step back and look at what is going wrong with your pitch. Are you sending it to the wrong magazines? Is it not targeting a specific section? Do you not have a clear idea? Is the story kind of unpublishable, and you're essentially asking an editor to help you work it into a story? So if you have gone on a trip, so this is kind of moving forward, but it's important to know in advance that if you're going to go on a trip and you don't have a confirmed assignment, you can place a story, but you do need to work at it. You do need to have the mindset that you will pitch until that story is accepted. Okay, so let's go back to this question, which is from somebody else. Is it safe for you to pre-pitch stories about a destination that you've never visited based on what a PR person says? And I love this question because, in my opinion, it's very scary to have no guarantee that the thing that I might be pitching based on the itinerary is interesting. And I think this is a little bit of an evolved, or not exactly first world problem, but it's not something that hits you until you've gotten burned by going on a trip where something on the itinerary just looked awesome, but in reality it was like next to a parking lot that was overgrown with weeds and had a gross chain fence around it, and on the other side was supposed to be like the waterfront, but it's not a waterfront in the modern we've redone the waterfront way. It was a waterfront in a kind of, you know, concrete barrier and some like trash strewn along the rocks way, and there was no walkway there even to kind of make it something that you could do, and it was like a 10-minute minimum drive from downtown, and there was no way to get there in public transit, and it just wasn't going to be something that interesting. So I've had these things happen. I'm sure some of you will have these things happen if they haven't happened to you already. But a PR person's job is to make something sound attractive. And there's times when, you know, they do their job so well that they've really only told you about 2% of what's going on with that thing, and the rest of it is just not that interesting. And you really don't think that you can sell it. And this is a situation that I never want or would want for any of you to be in about something that you have already pitched, something that has already been assigned and you're now on the hook to deliver. So I really recommend, and even if you're experienced, you can still get caught with this. Like I said, you know, PR people can do wonders. Good PR people can do wonders. So I really recommend, if you don't know the destination, if you have no ability to get pictures, TripAdvisor reviews, any other validation that the thing is actually as fantastic as you are now selling it to the editor you're pitching as, to wait until after you've been to pitch. And in fact, I typically like to pitch most things after I travel for this reason. I typically pitch things in advance only when they're just so clear, like it's a roundup and all the venues exist, and of course the roundup can happen. And even then, sometimes one or two things close or won't be around next season, but you can slot something else in because you still have 3 or 4. So those are typically the only times when I will, with confidence, pre-pitch a story. If you have a relationship with an editor and they're kind of saying, oh, like, okay, yeah, go to this place and write a story for us, that's different because it's not a specific story that you're on the hook for. So because you can find a story based on what's there. So that's my quick 2 cents about pre-pitching stories before you actually go on the trip. So as we get into talking more about what kind of stories you can pitch, whether you should pitch them before or after the trip depends on you, it depends on the description, it depends on what you're pitching. So all of the things that we're going to talk about now are things that you could be pitching before the trip or after, but you want to be doing that research and doing that thinking before you go so that you can pick up the information, do the research on the ground to be able to write the pitch when you get back if you haven't pitched it in advance. Okay, so let's see if we can get a slide to go forward. Yay, okay. So let's talk about how to reframe your research to make sure that you have solid pitch ideas. So what research are you doing before you go on a trip, whether it's a press trip that you've accepted or a trip that you're kind of planning for yourself? And there's no shame, no judgment here. I just kind of want to see what kind of things you guys are already doing so that I can incorporate that into what I'm going to say. Because I wouldn't say I'm famous for not doing research, because I do research before I actually go outside. But when I'm traveling by myself and not on an organized press trip, especially if I have a bunch of other stuff going on at the time, I might not know what I'm doing before I get there, apart from having chose the venues, the destinations for specific reasons. But then I'll spend like an hour and a half in bed making, you know, a whole list of all the things I want to do and why, and reading every single Eater article and everything that's been written about the destination. So I think one of the things, and I'm seeing some of you guys drop this in on the chat, on the questions area on the side, is what's new? And I'm so glad to hear that, because what's new in an area is a really tricky subject. And as I was thinking about what we were going to talk about in today's webinar, I was thinking about this kind of catch-22 of what's new. Oh my God, Donna, I love you. So Donna has just said she prints out info, maps, side notes, and the average is about 20 pages. Before I even did this job, I used to make these elaborate packets like that about places and everything like that. So I love that. And if you have the time and the wherewithal to make your own little dossier about a destination, I highly recommend it. But in terms of what's new, this is a difficult area, because what's new might not be interesting enough for print. It might not actually be new enough. And it might be something that has already been covered in the places that would cover it, because just as you're finding out that it's new, the people who cover that area regularly have also used those methods and found out in that way. And I think that this is something that we need to be particularly careful about when we are thinking about what we're going to pitch and what we're going to research when we're on the ground, because it can be very easy and alluring, you know, to walk around a quote-unquote new museum or a new museum exhibit. This, I think, is a more dangerous one. And take lots of notes, get, you know, great information, and then have trouble pitching it because the museum opened like 5 months ago and everyone that's going to cover the opening has already done so, or the exhibit may have opened when you were there, but it's only there for 2 months, and so print just couldn't do it. The timeline isn't there. So I think that we have to be very careful when we're looking at what's new. So let's get into talking more specifically about ways to reframe your mindset as you're thinking of pitches. And as we do that, I'm going to give you some pieces of advice of, like, you know, rather than imagine this, let's imagine that. And that involves some different types of articles. So I want to go over some different article types, and these are really the major types of articles in terms of format. So first, I just want to go through these to make sure we're all on the same page in terms of concepts and words. So take a little look over this, and I'm just going to go quickly through what each of these mean. So a news brief is the type of thing that you actually would be writing without traveling to the destination, typically, because that would be something that you would write based on a phone interview or based on a press release. And these are the kind of things that would appear in the very, very front of the magazine, where the shortest sections are kept. And with a lot of smaller magazines in terms of distribution, these shorter articles in the front will all be written in-house. But with larger magazines like a Condé Nast or Travel and Leisure, or even a lot of the major regional magazines, like I know we recently put Indianapolis Monthly, and what was the other one? We put Indianapolis Monthly, and I know we have Chicago, we have Portland, we have a lot of these different regional magazines. And in the regional magazines as well, those news briefs are often written by freelancers. Now, interviews, I think we're all pretty familiar with an interview piece, but I've separated interviews out from profiles, because an interview in this context, I'm talking about something that's more published as a Q&A style piece, whereas a profile is something that would be more akin to the editorial equivalent of a case study. So you have interviewed somebody, you've gathered information by talking about them, by talking about some people related to them, by talking about other businesses or other people who have knowledge of them and getting opinions, and then you put all of that together into an article about that business or about that person. And then a roundup can happen in a couple different ways. So I talk a lot about baskets of kittens, and if you haven't heard me mention that term, it's where you have one thing that's great, so one kitten, which is cute and adorable on its own, but then you take 5, 4, 7, however many other kittens who are all slightly different. They all look a little different, they all act a little different. In the case of a roundup, they might be things that are, you know, all restaurants that are doing molecular gastronomy in one city, in one region, in one state, in one country, or around the world. And that is your basket of kittens, which is even cuter than one on its own, and how can an editor resist that? So your basket of kittens can be, like I said, a lot of things that are related in one way but not related in others. But a roundup might also be a destination guide. It might be a roundup of things to do in the destination that are different. So it might be a roundup that includes where to stay, what to do, where to eat, where to walk, what to see, best festivals. So roundups can take these two different forms. Then we've got features, okay? But I only have narrative features on here because all of these other things up here, the interview, the business profile, the person profile, the roundup, those can also take the forms of features in terms of length. So right here, we're really just talking about format. So a narrative feature is the kind of thing that you should hopefully not be pitching before your trip. And even if you do pitch it, this is important to note, if you do try to pitch a narrative feature before your trip to an editor that you haven't worked with before, you're not incredibly likely to get a positive response. And I just want to put that out there because I know a lot of you are perhaps interested in certain interview features and people in the Pitchapalooza, we've been talking about this a lot, but I want to make sure that we're clear that if you have not been and you have not worked with the editor, you should avoid pitching that feature and do it after. If you've been, go ahead and pitch. If you know the editor, go ahead and pitch. But make sure you have one of those two boxes checked before you're pitching that feature. So a postcard, it's kind of like a narrative feature, but a bit shorter. So, well, a narrative feature, it's important to have a transformation, a storyline, characters. A postcard is something that might be narrative and evocative, but it's shorter and it doesn't necessarily have to have that nice bookended packaged story arc to it. A personal essay, on the other hand, is going to be something where you take a question. Essays are designed to be exploring questions. So I think I had mentioned on last week's call when I was in the Netherlands the idea of how Dutch people leave the curtains on their windows open, or they don't have curtains in the first place, and you can just walk right by as they're having dinner and look in and see what they're eating or see on their laptop what they're working on. And why is that? So that's the kind of thing that would be an essay. And then a service or how-to piece is when you're talking about something in the second person. So the object or the main focus of the article is going to be the reader and how they can have an experience. So now that we've kind of solidified those couple things, I'm going to talk about a couple switches for idea types that you might have looking at an itinerary and other things to consider. But I'm hoping that as I've put these idea and article formats out here for you, that this can also help as we move forward for you to see that some of the things, besides these three examples that I'm going to give, some things that you might have been thinking about pitching from a trip are going to have a hard time finding a home because they just don't fit into the types of article formats that editors are typically looking to publish. Even if it's the kind of thing that you might put on your blog, it'll be difficult for it to find a home in an editorial outlet, whether that's an editorial website or in a print publication. So here are a couple switches that I often see. And some of these come from some ideas that we had been workshopping in the recent Pitchapalooza, and some are from coaching calls, and some are just ones that I see all the time when we do workshops. So just one venue. So people were talking a lot about looking for things that are new. And this is one of the things where if something is new, it still might not be enough to just write about that venue. And this is the kind of thing where, like, yeah, maybe it's been open for a little while. I'm not talking about that. This is the kind of thing where just that one venue on its own it's a restaurant that's new, or it's a hotel that's new. But so what? There's already 1,000 hotels in Montreal and 20,000 restaurants. Those numbers are totally made up. Don't quote me on that. So what that one more restaurant is open, even if it is from a celebrity chef? Why do we care? Now you can say, okay, well, I have to come up with the why. But the thing is that that's just a hard sell for an editor, just one restaurant, okay? And so it's much better where you can, if you can take that one venue and you can add some more venues and tell a bigger story. You can turn it into a basket of kittens. Just because that one kitten is cute, it might just not be enough. So this is the kind of thing where, for instance, I was workshopping with somebody who lives in Dubai, and we were talking about this neighborhood. And we were talking about why she wants to write about that neighborhood in order for us to figure out what kind of stories we could pitch, what kind of outlets we could match that to, and what she could really do with it. She just kind of had this sense that this neighborhood was up and coming, and there was something there. And so I asked her, like, okay, what? Give me some facts, some statistics. What is up and coming about this neighborhood? And she told me about this restaurant that was opening and how the restaurant was founded by somebody who had pop-up restaurants all over the city and then finally opened this restaurant. And while that's normal in most parts of the world, for Dubai, or actually it was Abu Dhabi, that was really rare. Pop-up restaurants really aren't a thing there, and so this was very special. And so I said, okay, like that description now that she's told me tells me so much. It tells me about the type of audience that this needs to be going to, but it also, yes, it tells me why this venue is interesting, but it also gives me an idea of how we can turn this into a bigger story. So the way to do a roundup and show not just that restaurant, which is interesting, but that neighborhood is interesting, is to show other things that haven't been done anywhere else in Abu Dhabi that are being done in this neighborhood for the first time. So we came up with a gallery that was similar. We came up with a shop that we came up with a couple other things. So if you have just one venue, you need to do two things with it. You need to tie it into a trend. And when I say trend, I don't mean like a fashion trend. I don't mean like, you know, sea buckthorn or foam on your desserts. Those two things have been appearing together on like every menu in every country that I've been going to recently. It's a Nordic thing, sea buckthorn. If you don't know, that's why it's appearing everywhere. But the thing is that you need to take multiple things that are related, yes, but then explain why it matters. That's what I mean about trend. So for instance, it's important that these things, which are happening everywhere else in the world, but haven't happened before in Abu Dhabi, are starting to happen there, and why that's happening, and how it shows Abu Dhabi opening up culturally to Western influences and different things like that. So it's not just that we're taking this one venue and then finding a couple of the things that are like it. You can't just stop there. You have to find some of the things that are like it that tell a greater story, that have some impact, that have some lesson to take away. Shelley says, find the pattern. Totally true, and I love it. And I'm trying to think of another good example. So the opening party at this convention that I'm here for, this tourism convention, was at a restaurant on the water. Montreal is a waterside city, not the biggest thing, but at a restaurant that was serving like new Canadian small plate fusion. And I was kind of like, okay, is that really interesting? Is that really a thing? And then I was like, well, what does new Canadian mean? And then I looked at the menu and I was trying to figure out, and I realized that, you know, Canada, I think in some ways perhaps more so today than the U.S., is really made up of so many different immigrants from all over, but also from specific places. And if you go to Toronto or here in Montreal, you know, there's like Chinatown and Indiatown, but then there's also, you know, different African foods. I went to a restaurant that's a Mauritanian, I think I'm saying that right. It's from Mauritania in Africa. So there's a lot of global cuisine that's now shaped Canadian culture, which is now being mixed with the local ingredients in the same way that Nordic cuisine celebrates sea buckthorn and things like that. And so that gave me the idea of like, okay, like who is really doing new Canadian cuisine and trying to define that as something on the global scale. So that would be how you could take one thing, which is a restaurant, for instance, and then say, who else can we add to this to make this a roundup that's interesting that I can sell somewhere? You know, and now that has become something that I'm not just writing about one restaurant, and in particular if it's a restaurant that's been open for a little while, but I can go to American Way, the airline of American, or the magazine of American Airlines, and they have a part of their front of book where they, it's ostensibly called the simply the dining section, I believe, but they actually are looking to highlight a specific city and a trend that's happening in that city and why it's going on the food map. So now I've gone from one restaurant that they want us to write about, and I'm not sure why, to how I can actually turn that into a story. So what do we do, though, with a single venue story on something that's not new? As I mentioned, this can be really dangerous because the PR people who are pitching you on the trip or the PR person for the venue, they're going to hand you this packet when you walk in, and it's going to have all their press releases, and it might have a list of story ideas. And typically I look at their story ideas and I'm like, these are great things for you to write blog posts on your own blog, but they are not something that anybody else is going to write about. And good PR people will actually give you, do this work that I'm doing right now for you, but the majority won't, and they'll give you things that they should just be writing about internally for the people who are already visiting them. But they aren't things that will get people who aren't visiting them to start. So this is what we want to look at, is how do we look at something and find that point of inertia for the not yet visitor and surpass that with something interesting enough to make them say, hey, I have to go there. Like, case in point, the Tourism Australia presentation that I was just talking about, he said that even though they have huge social shares, they're like this award-winning marketing and everything, what they really struggle with is overcoming that thing of, I want to go to Australia someday, and that's an expensive flight, and I can't budget for that right now, to this has to be the next place that I go to. I need to figure out how to get there. And you need to think about that with everything that you're pitching. So if something isn't new, and we can't simply tie it in to a trend, whether it's, you know, like a trend, or just something that we're pulling together, how do we write about that? How do we do justice to our press trip itinerary and get a story out of that? And the way to do it is to figure out what is unique about that venue or its owner, and not necessarily what is unique about it, like I said, like it serves new Canadian cuisine, okay? Like, but you want to dig in and say, why is it serving new Canadian cuisine? How did this person come up with it? Does this chef have this interesting backstory that they've been all over the world? Or maybe, better yet, that they have cooked in kitchens, you know, in absolute northern Canada, at research stations, and in wildlife parks, and had to learn what local people cooked in those areas previously and how to make do with the ingredients that he had while bringing in his experience from being in cooking schools in France and Italy and all these other places. That's a story about why this person has opened this business in the first place. I went to a museum in this very random part of Massachusetts on a trip a few years ago, and I was really intrigued because I had gone to school in Western Massachusetts, I had lived in Boston for several years, and I couldn't, it just blew my mind that there was an entire, large, beautiful, hyper-modern museum dedicated to Russian iconography in this kind of like no-name town in the kind of Rust Belt former factory area of Western Massachusetts. And it turned out that this guy was kind of like an industry magnate. He owned some of these factories back in the day and had made money from doing that. And his passion was Russian iconography. These paintings, some of which are large, they're often on wood. You see them in Eastern Europe, in churches and often museums dedicated to them as well. You know, they're painted by hand and they have this Gothic look to them, and the tiny ones are painted with brushes that are only a single hair wide to get the detail on the tiny, tiny icons. And he was fascinated with these and started collecting them, you know, as a wealthy individual collects art. And at some point his wife said to them, you have to stop or you have to open a museum because these can't stay in my house. And he was like, okay, fine, I'll open a museum. So he put together this amazing museum, and it acquires these collections of icons, you know, that are 20, 30 icons in a cycle that most museums wouldn't be able to acquire because they just don't have the space or the resources to have that much Russian iconography in their collection. And so here's this place which, you know, it's like to just write a story about the museum and its offerings and the icons might be a little esoteric for a lot of publications who would be like, well, I don't know that my readers would be all that interested in Russian icons. But the story about how the guy and his passion and how that grew into this thing and what it's done for the community, that's something that you can do in a lot of places because it's universally applicable. And that's the kind of thing that you can do as a story for an airline magazine as a feature, because airline magazines are often looking for this business angle because a lot of their frequent flyers are business owners or business people. So another sort of, you know, mistake trap that I see a lot of people looking to put together press trip pitches fall into is this one of, well, I'm going to just write a whole story about my trip. Like, I'm going to write one story about everything I did on my trip. And they're not necessarily setting out to do it in an I did this, I did that way. They are setting out to write an interesting story, but they want to tell every single thing that they did on that trip in one first-person story. And the problem is that there's not a home for that except on your blog and other low-paying, if they pay, websites that publish that same sort of thing, and they don't pay or they pay very little because they're essentially trying to just fill their pages as much as possible with whatever stories people will give them. It's not a good clip for you to have. And that's really kind of the last, what do you call it, the last resort that we want to have. We want to keep that as our in case we can't publish this anywhere else and we've tried our absolute hardest and we've asked Gabby to critique our query letters and we still can't figure out why this isn't getting published, place to place your stories. We don't want that to be our aim for where we're going to put every single piece of information for our trip, because once you publish something, whether it's on your blog or another person's blog or whatever, once you've covered those things from your trip, as far as a print outlet is concerned, it's published, even if it's just your blog, and they don't want it anymore. So you need to start with the heaviest hitters, with the most interesting stories when you go about pitching your trip so that you don't burn your opportunity to get those things placed there later. So the way to take this narrative piece or this full trip story and make it publishable and pitchable is to do one of two things. You can either take all the different things that you did and turn it into an itinerary piece. So airline magazines are often good for these, but they do have them in other places. Sunset, for instance, has one that's called A Perfect Day. And because Sunset is a regional magazine that has different issues in different geographical areas, they actually need something like 3 or 4 perfect days for every issue to go in the different issues that come out in different geographic areas. So if you're really tied to or struggling to come up with a different feature idea, an itinerary piece is a great way to go. Because then what you can do is say for WestJet, you do Montreal 4 ways, and you do Montreal as a music lover, as an art lover. Montreal has an amazing art scene, if you didn't know, as a food lover and as an outdoor lover. You can still do a 48 hours in Montreal piece for The Telegraph or for somebody else. So that's a good way to keep it so that even though you have done a piece on, you know, here's essentially like an itinerary for Montreal, you can do it for a different audience with a different rights distribution still as well, because it's not a 3,000 word piece that really kind of exhausts everything you possibly write about. But the other way to do it is as a transformation tale. And what I mean here is I actually mean a narrative feature, but I've put transformation tale in here because I want you guys to remember that any feature story of a narrative capacity that you're pitching really needs to have not just a point or an angle, but an arc. And that's difficult to kind of get your head around if you don't have a fiction or other writing background, so I think of it as transformation. Something needs to have changed in the protagonist, which if it's a first-person story is you, in your story. That's the arc. So you start out coming to Australia not knowing that the food is interesting, thinking that it's just going to be like British food, that it's relatively bland, and then finding out that they have avocado farms that you can visit and have avocado toast that's fresh, that's just been picked off the tree, and it makes you realize you never knew what an avocado tasted like. And you may have said that before Now you're going to do kind of, at some point in your story, you're going to jump back in time to the first time you had a farm fresh tomato on the farm, and you're going to talk about how that changed your perception of a tomato salad. And then you jump back and you talk about, you know, how the avocado farm works, and then how in Australia they have all these different tropical products that we don't think of that you can get as farm fresh, and how that's changed Australian cuisine as farm to table has become more prevalent, and so on and so forth. And that is your story of transformation. And so it's not just, I went to Australia and I ate all these things. It's, I went to Australia and realized this, and this is how it changed what I thought before the trip. So these are three main types of, I think I can pitch this after my press trip, stories that just don't work, and how to change them. So now, if I can successfully change the slide, there we go. The second roadblock I see in people putting together the stories that they're gonna pitch after their press trip that I wanna make sure that we clear up is audience. This is a huge one, and it's one of the things that every time I do a conference talk about pretty much any topic, I really, really drill down on, because one of the things that holds us back, whether we are pitching to get travel content marketing gigs for local tour companies, or we're pitching magazines, or we're just working on our own blog, what holds us back from getting fast, quick, and easy success is not having a 100% clear idea of who we are writing for. And so, it's a lot, and we have a whole number of lessons on this in Pitchapalooza, but we talk about what an editor's day is really like, what an editor needs from you, why editors even bother to work with freelancers in the first place if so many of the pitches they get are off base. Why do they bother? And it's because they need ideas that they, sitting in their little cubicle office in New York and never leaving the concrete island, would never have. They would never come across this information. That is why they need you. So in that case, it's very important to highlight to that editor that you are bringing them something that they can't get their hands on, that you are trustworthy to write it, and that you really do know it well. So in the case of what stories we're going to pitch from a trip, the place where people typically go wrong is not actually considering who goes to this destination. This is something that I see a lot when people are like, oh, well, I want to pitch, you know, this story based on this trip. And I say, to who? And they don't know. And it's not necessarily that they don't know. It's that they're pitching to an audience that's not themselves, that's not the way that they travel, and they haven't really thought about how that person travels. So, for instance, when I do interviews with tourism boards, as you may have heard on the recent call, I often start by saying, you know, what kind of people come to your destination, or who is your destination best for, or what's the best way for someone to take advantage of your destination? Because that helps me to understand who their target audience is, even if they're not clear on it. By knowing from them who shows up, even if they're actually trying to market to somebody else, it allows me to see who that's a fit for. Because, you know, you can market to your heart's content to one type of traveler. You know, you can market to the young millennial, but if you've got a lot of multi-generational families showing up, that's who your pitches should be going to, because that's the type of traveler, the type of reader that an editor is going to know lines up with your pitch as soon as they see it, because they know their readers. So what that means is that we need to find some ways to figure out what is the audience, if not for specific ideas, because we're not there yet, we're ahead of ideas, we're before ideas right now, we need to figure out what is the audience for the destination. So the very first pass on an itinerary that I like to do before putting together pitches is to figure this out, to figure out the audience. And here are some specific questions to do it. So the very, very first one, and I'd love to know, do you guys look up what's already been written about a destination that you're visiting on a press trip before you go there? Because this is something that I think I started doing kind of by accident, but it's incredibly important. And not just for this audience research reason that I was telling you about, but in order to know what's already been covered, what's done, so to say, and then find the holes and see what hasn't been done so you know what you actually can be pitching. So if you're not doing a Google, and not just a general Google, but a Google, you know, to see what's been written about in the types of publications and the geographic areas that you're thinking about pitching to, definitely make sure that you start doing that. And then what are the area's demographics, right? So I talked about how you can ask the tourism professionals, the tourism board in that area to see what information they have. And sometimes they'll tell you. And like I said, sometimes they're going to tell you who they're targeting, who they want to be having show up, not necessarily who's actually showing up, because that's their goal, is their goal to be getting the types of people that they want. But if you go pretty much every tourism board, there's a few that aren't, that are actually destination management organizations, which are companies, but the majority of convention and visitors bureaus or tourism boards are governmental or nonprofit in some way, shape, or form. And so they have to be putting out reports every year with information on who's coming, how money is being spent. By the way, if you want to get into travel content marketing, looking at these reports is fantastic because you can see exactly for free, you know, it's just out there waiting to be found, what money these tourism boards are spending on marketing and what types of marketing. It has to go in their annual report. So in their annual report, though, is also the people that are coming, how many people, what are the demographics of those people. For instance, in research for my book on Indian weddings, I've been pulling a lot of visitor numbers. So you can pull visitor numbers of what people from different countries are arriving in the U.S. or Canada or India or wherever. So all that information is out there waiting for you, and it's really not that difficult to get your hands on. And that will immediately cut out a swath of article ideas that you were thinking that you might be able to pitch from that destination and shine light on what is most saleable, what's the best use of your time. Then you can also ask the destination this question of what they are looking for in terms of audience, who they're trying to reach, what they're expecting in terms of coverage. And this is, like I said, something to take into account, but it's not necessarily going to be the guiding factor on what you're pitching. But it can help give you ideas, and especially if you can get a pitch in an assignment into one of the places that lines up with what you're looking for, that's great because it really ingratiates yourself with the tourism board because you helped them tick a box on their annual goals, and that helps them look good in that report and look good to the people who fund them, okay? The next question is, how do people get there? This is really important because you can't be pitching an idea to, for instance, WestJet magazine for one of these four ways articles that I mentioned, if it's a place that they don't fly. The magazine's just not going to take it. And furthermore, if you are looking at pitching stories about a destination that's a bit off the beaten path, this is extremely important, not just in terms of who flies there, but in terms of who, in terms of risk-averse travelers, types of travelers would go there. What type of people are looking at going to these destinations where the infrastructure might not be there, where the hotels might not be as nice? For instance, Bali is known for having really over-the-top resorts where you have your own private pool and all sorts of things like that. But there's this town, Ubud, that I had gone to maybe like 10 years ago now, and I've gone more recently, and it's changed quite a bit. But that town, I always thought, was the best place in Bali to be going. It was a place where you could have the real food, you know, where you could sit all day and read books. It wasn't so hot. There weren't so many mosquitoes. It was just the best. But back then, there really weren't nice or Western or standard kind of hotel options. And so that immediately cut out a ton of places to write about it, because the Bali experience that a lot of other people would want is air conditioning, is a pool, and all these things. And so now that they're opening those resorts there, I think there's like five coming online this year, maybe in 2018 and 2019, that opens up writing about that city to an entirely different market, a very different type of magazine, a very different consumer. So once you know those things, then you need to look at the itinerary again. Now you know what you could potentially be pitching and who you can potentially be pitching. And you need to start thinking about, oh, great, these are the audiences. These are the options. But what do I personally want to be writing about? What makes sense for me to spend my time on the ground and in my writing working on after this trip? Because if you are trying to take every little thing in the itinerary and pitch it and find a home for it, I can tell you, you're gonna not put your heart into it. You're not gonna honor that contract with yourself to just pitch your heart out until you find a market, because you don't really care. You don't really care about that story. And you've obviously decided to go on or are interested in this particular press trip for a reason, because there's something there that interests you. So focus on those things. Don't just say, well, oh, this looks like it's something I could pitch, so I'm going to pitch that. Take the things that you are really excited about on that trip and find the places to put them. Is if you have the worksheets, you can take a look at this Terra Delba trip. So I was talking about making sure to pitch the things that actually interest you, because you're going to have a hard time really pushing yourself to get a story placed on something that you're just not that jazzed about. So this was a trip that was attached to a conference, and all of us that were on this trip, most of us actually knew each other before, and we were like, well, of course, because this is the best trip. Who would pick any other trip? And we were all just so wild about this trip. And the funny thing is, when I look at the itinerary now, having gone, I just have such great memories of all of the different things on here that it's hard to remember what specifically drew me to it in the first place. But I know what drew several people on the trip. So, for instance, there was one individual, a couple actually, who runs a website which is about eco-travel. And they were very interested in this tuna tour activity. They were interested because tuna tours are often done in a way that's very not ecologically friendly. Tuna fishing has had a lot of negative publicity about this, particularly in that space. And they, you know, not in a hypocritical way, were excited to see this operation because it was supposed to be much more eco-friendly, and specifically the swimming portion as well. So this, to them, was one of the big reasons that they wanted to go on the tour. Another friend of mine who runs a food tour company in Spain, actually, she was really excited about the mussels. Another person was really excited about this Ebro Delta Natural Park because they had never thought of Spain as kind of a saltwater flat delta sort of environment. A lot of Spain is very dry and arid or mountainous or coastal. This is an entirely different ecosystem, and she's a photographer, and she was just really looking forward to that portion of the trip. So once you've identified the one or the multiple things about that trip that do excite you, okay, we're gonna try to go back to the slides from before, and hopefully it'll work out. So we're talking about what to do on press trips. Nope, it hates me. All right, we're going to just look at it here. So once you've identified that one or several portions of your trip that you want to be focusing your pitches on, this is just a very random little easy simple table that I made for the pitch portfolio webinar that we had done previously. And in this case, what I had done is I put the names of these aspects of the itinerary that I wanted to pitch on the side, and then I thought about the travel style. So in this case, I was thinking, you know, very specifically the types of things that I mentioned for the WestJet Fourways articles before. So somebody who's interested in culinary, maybe somebody who's multi-generational, somebody who's more interested in outdoors. So these are things that tie into this audience. And in this case, I've just broken up audience in terms of demographic versus audience in terms of interest. Okay, so that's what those two different things are. Then I've thought about the different types of articles. And then I've thought about where the magazines I could pitch would be based, and if they're not going to be in the U.S., other international outlets that I can pitch those to. So this that I'm offering here is just one framework for filling in the markets that you're actually going to pitch that you can try. But the thing is that if we go back for a second to this first pass of research questions, as you're seeing where things have already been written about the destination that you're interested in, it's going to start to give you ideas because you're going to see who's covered it. And you can say, okay, well, you know, if The Telegraph, which is a British newspaper, has covered it, I wonder if one of the other newspapers in the UK, like The Guardian, might be interested in covering it from a different angle. Or similarly, you know, if the Dallas Morning News has covered it, or perhaps let's look at it this way. If the LA Times has covered it, would the SF Chronicle cover it from a different angle, the same destination? Or, you know, you can say, well, if this is the angle that this publication has taken, I'm not going to take that angle. So I need to take a different angle, and it looks like that's going to need to go to a different audience. So as you're looking at where things have already been written, that's going to naturally start to cut out certain markets for you, and it's also going to start to present ideas based on markets that are similar or markets that are different, because you want to take a different demographic approach to the one that you've already seen. So as I mentioned, this table is just one kind of framework that you can use. And I recommend, like I said, you start with a few different areas of interest or attractions when you're starting to fill in markets. Because if you have your whole trip, if you have 10 stops, 20 stops, 5 stops, 7 stops, if you have too many stops and then too many different things within that stop that you could do a story on, or that the format of the story, for instance, a business profile and a roundup, and you're thinking of like, well, this would maybe make sense for a narrative feature, but I'll have to wait and see until I go. Now it's really multiplying, and now you've got 25 different ideas that you're looking at markets for. And not only is that overwhelming, but you're losing your mental focus, and thus you're losing the ability to be hanging out in the travel magazine database or in a Barnes & Noble store and see a magazine and be like, oh, this is perfect for that idea that I'm trying to figure out, because there's too many ideas for you to carry them all in your head all the time. So what I like to think about is that you're going to break out a few attractions, like 3 attractions, 2 attractions, you can even do 1, and break that one place into a couple of different ideas, and then match those ideas. So now we're looking at something more comfortable, we're looking at 8 ideas, or maybe 10 ideas, and we're going to match those to different markets. And these can be the kind of things, like I said, where we know that we like to do stories that are on the full destination, and so you're going on a press trip like that Spain one, and so you've said, okay, this is Spain, it's successful from Barcelona. That has cut out itinerary article options in a lot of airline magazines that don't fly to Barcelona. So now that's left me with, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 places that I could potentially be pitching this itinerary about this destination to. And then what you do is you arm yourself with those pitch options, those market options, when you go on your trip. So now you've shown up in Spain, and rather than just having the itinerary and some concepts like, you know, I want to be writing about the tuna fish tour, or I want to be writing about the Delta, like that's a topic that's so big. You say, okay, I want to write about how to do a day trip from Barcelona out to the Delta for a section like Delta Skies Escape, which is a short piece on how to do something outdoorsy that's a couple hours from a major destination. And that completely focuses your research, because you're not just trying to soak up every single thing that the guide says about the Delta. You want to make sure that you know how to get there. You want to make sure that you know what are the best things to see in one day or in a short trip. You want to make sure that the layout is conducive to people who might be coming on public transit, and so on and so forth. So as you start to narrow down not just the things on the trip that you're interested in writing about, but particularly what about those things, and then particularly what markets those match to, that is going to arm you with a bunch of research questions for when you land and when you're on the trip. And that is what we're going to really zone in on next week, is how to get that information, how to fill in the ideas and potential markets. So again, after you do these things, do you want to pitch before or after? It depends on your confidence level, but it also depends on the lead time. I want to circle back on this because we talked about it last week, and I believe it was Taylor brought it up in the Pitchapalooza as well. If you are looking at going somewhere that is seasonal, perhaps you're going to a festival, or we spoke also in the Pitchapalooza about there's a botanical garden in the Netherlands that's only open for 2 months every year when the tulips are in bloom. So that's something that you would have to go this year and experiencing it to write about it next year. And that means that you want to be pitching the editor actually perhaps in advance of when you're going, even though the story is not going to come out for 14 months, because that editor is slotting in seasonal things for spring, for summer, for winter, now for next year, because she knows that people need to travel now. So there are some things that are definitely guaranteed, like festivals or like the tulips being in bloom, that do make sense for you to pitch in advance because of the lead time, because the editor is going to want to assign it now. They're going to want you to know that you have the story when you go there so that you can get the pictures, you can get the right information. And again, thanks so much for joining us today, you guys, and for putting up with all of the technical hurdles. I really appreciate it. Have a great week.